Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Today I have Wendy Shepherd here from Ivory Springs. I am so excited to talk to Wendy. I've been following her work. I've actually made one of her quilts, and she has fabulous designs. You've seen them all over the place, and she has a new book. So we're going to talk a lot about quilting and what she does and learn about her book. It's going to be a great show. Hi, Wendy. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thank you for having me on. I'm very honored.
I just love your work. Why don't you tell me a little bit about how you actually got started making quilts?
All right. Well, I'm happy to share. Actually, I started making my first quilt in October 2005. I'd never had any crafting or sewing experience. I didn't even know how a sewing machine worked, let alone
That's amazing.
I know, it's crazy. Well, what happened was, back in 2005, I was working as a researcher at the University of Arkansas, and I got interested in smocking. So I was smocking little girls' dresses, but after the smocking is done, I needed a way to actually make the dresses and have the dresses actually happen. And I had a friend who was a quilter, and she's quilted for about 25, 30 years. And so she asked me to go over to her house to use her machine. And of course, being the quilter that she is, you know, quilters always encourage other quilters, other people to quilt. Mm-hmm. She said, "You've got to just quilt." I said, "Well, I don't know. You know, I'm not really that interested." This lady, Barbara, she had an amazing thing going on at her house at the time. We lived in a university college town, and she opened up her home every week on, I think, Thursday or Friday night. And she had all her machines out. College girls can just come to her house to sew, and she would help them.
Wow.
And so she was teaching some girls some four-patch quilts. To be quite honest, I wasn't excited about the quilts because I didn't think they looked very pretty. Mm-hmm. But then she's a dear lady, and she really encouraged me to try out quilting, and we just had a baby in one of our extended families, and I thought, well, I'll just try a baby quilt. And but I told Barbara I didn't want to do a four-patch quilt, and asked if it was okay for me to look for a pattern that I liked that she would teach me how to do it. And so, long story short, that's how I got started in quilting, and I really enjoyed the quilting experience from my first quilt, and I guess, like they say, all that is history. And now I'm quilting.
I just think that's amazing. I just love the fact that she was teaching, you know, nine patches or four patch units, whatever, to beginners, which is, of course, how a lot of people learn. But you were like, oh, I don't know, that's not so exciting. But you went ahead and did it all anyways. That's great.
Yes, and I really believe that sometimes people quilt or keep on quilting because of that first quilt. Mm-hmm. And some people quit quilting. They don't quilt anymore. Also, perhaps sometimes because of that first quilt, maybe they didn't have such a good experience, you know. So it's been an amazing journey.
I love your story. I just think it's fantastic. It's fantastic that she was teaching people at the university, teaching young people, and you got involved because you wanted to make a dress.
I know. And you know what? I have come to realize I just totally stink at garment construction. I don't make dresses anymore.
Oh my gosh, Wendy, we must be kindred spirits because, you know, I make clothing for a long time in high school, and I tell people I make clothing badly. You know, I'd make one after another, and my mother always said she just was amazed because they really weren't very well done, and I would make them and wear them once and move on.
That's amazing. Now, do you have pictures of you wearing your own clothes, that the ones that you made from high school?
You know, I would have to go back through a lot of stuff. There probably is something way back in the archives on real pictures, you know, not digital.
That would be really cute to see, though.
It would. I have to. Okay, I'm going to make myself a note to look for that, just for you, Wendy.
Why don't you
tell me a little bit about the style quilt that you like to make right now?
I kind of like to think of my style as more of a relaxed traditional. I like traditional quilts, and I normally design and make traditional quilts, but a lot of times I like to add a little bit of maybe a little bit of a modern twist or a contemporary twist to it, just to make things a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, and your colors are very fresh. You know, I like the fabrics that you use a lot.
Yes, I guess I tend to be attracted to those kinds of fabrics, the colors. I like colorful quilts.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at some point, you decided that you would write about your quilt making. Did you start? You started your blog, Ivory Spring, your website.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start that when you sort of became a business, or were you doing that prior?
I think more as a prior. I was quilting, but because of my age group at the time, I didn't have many friends that are of my own age that were quilting.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to just look online and just found that there was such a huge group of quilters out there that were doing blogs and sharing about their quilts. I think I started out trying to do it that way and try to get connected with other quilters, other than my quilting teacher, Barbara, of course.
Right.
And
right.
I've made lots of friends. And I firmly believe, I guess, that quilters, no matter where they are, just are the sweetest people ever. So...
Well, I agree. I mean, and you have a community instantly when you know that another person quilts, right? You just have to say, well, I quilt.
Absolutely.
And this is like friendship.
Yes. And I like that in the quilting community, there is not much, personal issue. There's not much jealousy that I have found. Everybody admires everybody's work. And to me, that is one of the greatest things about the quilting community. I love it.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. It's very encouraging. And like you said, your first teacher who was like, if it's a quilter wants everybody to learn to quilt because we enjoy it so much that we want to. We're sure everybody else will also.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you, because one of the quilts that I actually made of yours for my brother was a piece that you did for the fabric company Benertex, and it's a very structural quilt. It's squares, layered, but they're outlined, and you have it on your website on the sidebar. You have an engineering background. Do you find that you enjoy the sort of linear designs?
Oh, I do. I think I really do. I didn't think I would at first, but once I got into it, it's like the mind wouldn't shut off. And I really like trying to bring perhaps mathematics and geometry into my quilt designs, because I think it's really fun to see how all the elements come together. So I like it.
Now, how did you get involved with designing for the fabric companies? Because you do that a lot. You know, they commission you to design a quilt with a fabric line, which then they have on their website, and you do just awesome work that way. How did that first happen?
Oh, thank you for your kind words, Pat. They mean a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Well, I think because mostly I started out designing for magazines. And then a lot of times I would write the companies to ask for sample yardages. And then I think that connection is made. And after that, a lot of times that's after I submit my work to the magazines, people from the companies would contact me and ask me if I would like to work on designing with certain fabrics that they might have. And I always like doing that, because a lot of times the fabrics they give me, they might not be like my usual style, and that kind of forces me to get out of my comfort zone. And
it's a challenge, isn't it, to be given a set of fabric and say, what can you do with this?
Exactly, exactly. And that's kind of how Movement in Squares got started, when they gave me the images to look at, and I thought, oh my, I don't even know what to do with these fabrics. And then, you know, I just started thinking and thinking, and I just, and sometimes I design better in my head. It would take me maybe like a week just to think through the images and things to explore. And then I guess I was also thinking about mass stuff back then. I don't know. I think specifically, I think I was thinking about chain reactions. And I thought, you know, maybe I could do some kind of like a chain-looking design. And when I sat down to actually draw it out, everything seemed to work out. So I've been very, very excited and just so pleased at how well that pattern has been received. And to have you actually make it.
It is really, really cool. And they're actually, to describe it even better, they're like frames. So they're squares and rectangles, but they're like a frame. And like you said, they make like a chain. And it's just it's a nice quilt for anybody, but particularly when people look for more masculine quilts, I think that is so perfect.
So does your brother like the quilt?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Yes, and I like
the fabric you chose.
Well, I want to get in one more thing before we take the break, and then we're going to come back and talk about your book. You are published in many, many of American Patchwork and Quilting's family of magazines. You had, was yours, your quilt was on the cover of the calendar, right?
Yes, it was. It was. That was very exciting to me.
Did you just like go crazy when they told you? I would.
I would. Actually, Jill Mead, she said she kept the secret for a little bit longer until it was safe to tell me. And when she told me, I just couldn't believe it. It was one of those moments like as if you feel like you have arrived.
It's like, well, the cover of the calendars are out there. Uh-huh. They're so public, you know, so you can go anywhere and see it. That's what the images everybody sees. It's just, it's a gorgeous quilt. Well, we're going to take a break, Wendy.
Okay.
And then we'll be right back. So this is the American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I'm talking to Wendy Shepherd of Ivory Springs. Wendy, I want to talk about your book now, okay?
Okay.
Yay! You have a I have a new book out, and its title is, here, I just got Recreating Antique Quilts, Re-envisioning, Modifying, and Simplifying Museum Quilts. I have a huge love affair with museum quilts. How did you come about with the idea?
I think I have always loved history. My dad loved history, and as a result, I love history. Mm-hmm. And after I got into quilting, I began to discover for myself this treasure trove of antique quilts. And I was just totally fascinated by the rich history and the heritage in quilting. And so the idea of the book came after I made, I think, maybe two or three quilts that were based on historical designs for the magazine. I really, really enjoyed it because I was able to put my own spin to the quilt, but still stay true, I guess, to the spirit and the original design of the quilt. And as I was thinking more about trying to connect with the quilters of the past and also wanting to pay tribute to all the quilt makers of the past that made all these gorgeous, gorgeous treasures that we enjoy looking at today, many of them unknown, I felt like it was time to come up with something that would inspire today's quilters to also go back to I guess, appreciate the rich quilting history that we have today.
Yeah, I feel the same way about the antiques or any quilt that came before me. It's like I'm continuing that heritage, you know, of making quilts and sharing them. Did you go to a museum to actually look at some quilts, or were you just inspired by different pieces?
I went to museums to look at certain quilts, but the quilts that are featured in my book, They were researched and I got the inspiration from Quilt Index. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was the website one of the ladies at the DAR Museum told me to check out.
Ah, okay, okay.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
What is one of your favorites that you recreated in the book?
One of my favorites, I would have to say, it's my ivory Baltimore door banner, the red and white applique quilt. And the inspiration from that is from one of the DAR quilts. I wanted to simplify the design so much so that someone who has admired Baltimore quilts in the past but are afraid to make it, I wanted them to just try a block or two. And so that little door banner actually has two blocks that are done. And the design inspiration part of it came from actually the colorway of traditional French needlework sampler, where you see a lot of times it's red stitch on cream fabric.
Oh, and, well, that's interesting.
And so I decided to reverse the colorway so I would make the applique part cream and stitched it on the red background.
Yeah, it is stunning that way.
Thank you.
You don't see people do that as often. You know, applique tends to be on a lighter background with darker images, but when you reverse that, it grabs your attention, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And if you look at the side block there, it's half of a block. And that is actually also inspired by antique needlework samplers. There are a group of samplers called the Quaker samplers, and they were stitched by Quaker girls. And a lot of times, if you look at their samplers, the motif on the side is cut in half.
Oh. Well, so that is fascinating. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's where the inspiration came from, where you saw on the side that block is cut in half. So.
And you also have in the book, which is really wonderful for those people who haven't done a lot of looking at Baltimore albums, you have one of the pieces that the DAR, the Daughters of the American Revolution Museum in Washington, D.C., gave you the photo to use in the book. And it's a glorious quilt that you have
glorious.
Featured.
Yes. And that's why I picked that quilt, because I felt like so much work and effort went into making that original quilt. And I'm just doing a small part, I guess, to draw people's attention to it so that people are aware of this huge treasures, this amazing collection of antique quilts out there in museums. And hopefully, as a result, people would be more apt to support any efforts to preserve these quilts and to recreate them as well.
Yeah, they're just gorgeous. And your quilting. Okay, we have to talk about your quilting, Wendy. You love to do feathers, and they're just stunning. Your quilted feathers. Did you find them easy to learn?
Actually, Pat, you'd be surprised to know, and you would think I'm just the weirdest creature on earth. I actually started learning feathers first in my free motion quilting.
Oh my. Yeah, that most of us don't do that, Wendy. That's not the first thing that we try.
Right. The reason is because I was making my third quilt and I got this idea of quilting 16 feather weaves on that quilt on just straight stitches. You know how you have to turn to make the curves and everything. And I about lost my mind. And after I persevere through that just so that I can finish the quilt, I told myself never again. And so I started making myself learn to quilt feathers, just free motion quilting, right after that. And so that's kind of how I started with my free motion quilting journey. And after I got the feathers, I went back to relearn some of the background motif, just so that I can have it grounded. And I enjoy quilting, the quilting part, actually more than any parts of the entire quilting process.
Well, I think that's great, because a lot of people shy away from quilting their own quilts, even small ones. They just, you know, they end up never finishing the piece because they just don't do it. Have you ever taught other people how to free motion?
I have in certain settings. Sometimes I teach in sewing centers, sometimes I teach at guilds. And I also teach an online class through Annie's. It's called Learn to Machine Quilt class. It's a class that's toward introducing quilters to get comfortable in moving the quilt families. I think that a lot of times people are scared to quilt their own quilts because they don't know the basics. But also, I firmly believe that once a person gets comfortable with moving the quilt sandwich in that little throat area, under that throat area of the sewing machine, that will tremendously help their quilting quality and everything else. And so all the motifs are specially selected in the class to help people get comfortable in moving the quilt sandwiches.
Oh, well, that's a good thing, because that's really where it needs to start. You need to do it. You can't just read about it and talk about it, right? You have to sit down
push
the pedal. That's like
That's right. And I tell people just try it. You never know if you don't try it. And of course that's true in my entire quilting story, right? If I hadn't tried it, I wouldn't have known just how much I would enjoy quilting. And I always tell my friend Barbara, she changed the course of my life.
Mm-hmm. I know. Just telling you, yes, you're going to like it. I had a friend did the same thing. You're going to like quilting. I'm like, I don't think so. And
that's
she's like,
funny.
No, you are. That's now they can find all these goodies on your website, ivoryspring.wordpress.com, everything that we've been talking about. I did want to ask you another little thing about how you collect fabric, because, you know, all of us are, you know, get fabric in different ways. And then when we're in business, we end up getting a lot of things from manufacturers to work with. When you go out to shop, do you shop by quilt that you're working on, or are you building collections? How do you approach it?
I normally just pick up fabrics that I think would look good with no specific projects in mind.
And then when you start a project, you pull from what you have first and then add to it?
Yes. A lot of times what I would do is I would start with coloring my designs with just the basic color, prints, just the colors. And then I would go out and see perhaps what I have or what other fabric companies, what they might have to offer that would suit the look of my fabrics as well as the colors that I'm using. In my book, actually, I used a lot of basic fabrics, what they say, not any specific lines, but like basic fabrics to achieve the look. And I felt like that would give quilters a lot more possibilities as far as making their own versions of the quilts.
Right, and it's a little more, it's more timeless. They can look at an image and just see. Like, I love that your red and white, it's, you know, the white or the cream is appears solid. So it's a great image.
Yeah, and I'm all about giving possibilities and ideas to quilters, and I love to see other people make my designs in their own choices of fabrics, because it, in doing that, they're essentially making their own quilt.
Right, and I love that too. I love to get pictures of people's work and done, you know, from my designs.
Yes, don't they just make your day?
Well, Wendy, this has been so much fun to get to introduce you to everybody, and your book is so gorgeous. I am sure it is going to be a huge hit.
Well, thank you so much, Pat, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, and I will be seeing you soon, I am sure.
Yes. Well, you take care.
Okay. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are going to come back and learn a little bit about how batiks are made, which is very exciting with Sew Batik. And so hold on, we'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box. Label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchworks and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to talk batiks. Yay! I was at a show up in Maine, and I went into the Sew Batik booth, which I always do whenever I can because their fabric is so gorgeous. And I was talking to Diane and Bruce, and I asked Bruce if he would come on and tell us a little bit about the company and how they started. So Bruce Magason is here to talk about Sew Batik. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
So how did you and Diane decide to create a company to produce batiks, your own batiks, your own designs?
Well, about 11 years ago, my wife, Diane, was a logistics management consultant who traveled Monday through Friday, sometimes Saturday, week upon week. And after 14 years of that, I was kind of unhappy saying goodbye to my best friend every week. And I always had a real strong desire to be in my own business. And at that time, I had been in the textile industry for over 20 years. So one day we hatched a plan and ended up starting our own business.
I think it's a fabulous story. It is. And, I love that you work together because my husband and I work together, too. So, you know, that's
great.
Yes, kindred spirits, kindred spirits. So you decided to produce your own batiks. Why did you go with batiks?
Well, I had two areas of expertise. One was as a manufacturer of printed fabrics. I had spent many years in print factories, orchestrating that for converters and customers. And the other one was in the production of batik fabric. I really, really had always been intrigued by the process of batik making. And it was just something that I felt I really wanted to do and invest my time and my life into.
So you really have a love of textiles since you've been in textiles for so many years.
Since 1982.
Yeah, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And you've worn them even longer, right?
Let's hope so.
So tell me, Bruce, what I found out was that your wife Diane told me, she says, oh, well, Bruce does all the designing. Because I'm like, oh, I want to talk about how you do that. And she's like, oh, don't talk to me. You got to talk to Bruce. So you are the designer of the images that go on the batiks. And it's a unique process to design for batiks versus designing for cottons, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's really the thing that drew me in was the fact that I could do it all myself and get it out there to consumers. And it all starts with a black and white sketch. Of course, it starts with an idea. And I shouldn't minimize that because I travel with a little black book that stays in my right back pocket. I don't go anywhere, even to bed, without it nearby, because anytime an idea crosses my noggin, I always am quick to write it down because it disappears really fast. But especially as I get older. But from the concept to execution, it's a matter of rendering the design or thought in a commercially executable, viable way, and that usually entails a black and white sketch within the size framework and technical framework of the stamp manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And then it goes digitally as an email attachment, a PDF, to the manufacturer, who painstakingly revises the sketch into something that can be executed in copper.
I was going to ask a question. Was your are your batiks made in like a factory, or we see things on the internet about them all being hand stamped, the batiks, by it being a very manual process. Are they a little bit more automated?
No, there's no automation whatsoever. It's a completely manual, amazing process, from the creation of the stamp to the application mm-hmm. of the wax, to the hand dyeing, to the finishing of it, the inspection of it, the packing and the shipping.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, it is a fascinating, it's time consuming. It also has a lot to do, don't you have like weather issues because it, where they have to, how they have to make them if it's too wet, you know, they can't,
oh,
it
sure.
can't dry.
You know, part of the process is something as simple as hanging out to dry. Besides drying, the sunlight gives the dye stuff its fullest bouquet. And when it's raining, that cuts into your production because no sun, no batiks. So mm-hmm. in the wintertime, that's their rainy season. So things like our 110-inch wide batiks and our batik flannels, there's no production at, when it rains. So we really have to time that as best we can.
Yeah, I always find that part so fascinating that people don't realize that it is so manual and that that's how you get that lusciousness to the designs is all the handwork involved. How does the wax get removed? I know they put the wax down, but how does it get removed?
The wax is removed by placing it in a metal, almost like a cauldron, except it's below ground. And the water is hot, but not boiling. It's dipped in there, and the wax is removed. It's subsequently dipped again in a soapy-like wash and then hung out to dry. But there's still some flecks of wax that are on the fabric. And just prior to the inspection process, there are staffers that have a flat edge, not quite a razor blade, but mm-hmm. a metal kind of tool that's basically scrapes off any of the flecks of residual wax.
Right. Because on a rare occasion on a batik, anybody's batik, sometimes you do find a little bit of that residue still on a,
for sure.
on a little piece.
Yet another reason why people should pre-wash their fabrics. One of my
yes. mantras. So do you, when you buy a batik and how should they be pre-washed?
You know, it really depends on the origin of the batik, but let's just assume it's Indonesian batik. Then we have to consider what colors we're talking about and whether there's a high contrast or not. My favorite methodology is to use a teaspoon of Synthrapol that you put in your washing machine, and it does a great job. It's what's called a surfactant, which is a fancy name for a powerful soap, and it mm-hmm. releases the dyes that are not chemically bonded to your cotton and allows it to leave harmlessly in your rinse water without reattaching someplace where you don't mm-hmm. want it to go.
Now, people use dye catchers a lot. Are they effective for batiks?
It's really a false sense of security because you want to purge or chemically bind the dyes. The dye catcher merely does what it says. It catches what is coming off the fabric, but that's not necessarily all of it. And it doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean your fabric is stable to use, whether it's a batik, a hand dye, or a printed fabric.
Mm-hmm. So Synthrapol is really the way to go.
Unless you have, let's say, a solid red or a bright green that's also solid, then there's another product which is called Retain. And mm-hmm. Retain is a fantastic chemical binder that binds the dyes to the cotton, but you have to have 140-degree water, and in high-contrast fabric situations, let's say in the extreme, a white dot on a red background, you would risk that white dot becoming pink. So I would use Synthrapol in that case. But absent the high contrast scenario, it's really a fabulous product as well.
So what is, this is great. This is such great information, Bruce. I want to have people realize where you are and how you work. You are independent. You and Diane run your business, and you sell almost exclusively just yourselves. So where can people buy your product?
So batik products are available through about 600 long arm quilters around the country that are not fabric stores, independent, small companies. They're available through the Sew Boutique website at www.sewboutique.com. We have a wonderful customer service department that's there to, you know, help people. And we do over 50 fabric shows, whether they be quilting shows or sewing shows a year.
Right, and that's where I always find you, because I like to stop in and say hi and get a hug. That's the best part.
My favorite thing to do.
That's right. Before we end, I wanted to touch base on the rayons. You have such an amazing, glorious array of rayons now. How are people using your boutique rayons?
The rayons are used almost exclusively in the production of clothing. It has a very silky hand to it, very dry, and a really magnificent drape. And the rayon also retains color in a way that is superior to cotton. So it's really been well received by folks who are making that special blouse, jacket, skirt, or so many other things. It's really been a wonderful addition to our product lineup.
Scarves, rayon scarves. Oh, then they can at least play with it in a small bit.
Boy, do we love it. Boy, do we love it.
Yeah, that is. Now, do you have a newsletter for your website?
Yes, we have a newsletter that comes out every 7 to 10 days. You can sign up for it at the Tiki Hut in our Sew Boutique booth, or you can go to the website and sign up for it there, or call the toll-free telephone number. May I offer it out?
Sure.
That's 877-235-5025.
Wonderful. Yeah, I highly recommend it if you want to keep in touch and know where they are. Bruce, this has just been fantastic.
I really appreciate you having me. I hope you have a nice day.
You too. And everybody, if you have questions about your boutiques, be sure that you call them and talk to them. They're so knowledgeable, or stop in the booth. Thanks, Bruce.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have got Jacqueline Steves here, wonderful, wonderful artist. I am always so excited. I've talked to Jacqueline a few times. She always has wonderful projects, amazing fun things. And today, the other thing that we're going to talk about is creating a special quilt. It's something a lot of us do or want to do. And so I just thought it'd be a perfect topic for today. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
You know, we were talking, you and I, about, you know, special quilts. And, you know, you have made a few. Can you tell me about one of them?
Yeah, well, the first one I ever made was a memory quilt that I made for my daughter's 8th grade graduation. And as usual, I didn't leave myself much time to do it, so I had to keep it really simple. Mm-hmm. But I told her that I was making her something, but I didn't tell her what. So we went out and chose the fabric. Mm-hmm. And that was actually good because she picked some fabrics, and I was like, really? I would have never picked those for you. So that was good to have her pick her, you know, her own fabrics. Mm-hmm. And then what I did was I ended up making, like, a 9-block lap quilt. So I just chose 8 pictures of her with her friends, and then for the 9th block, I did a Word document that just had her name and her class year on it, and I printed them onto that fabric transfer paper and ironed onto white fabric. And then I just used those for the center of the blocks, and like I said, I kept it really simple. I just added some 1-inch borders around those squares and added some sashing and really simple borders, and that was it. So it was really actually a pretty quick project, but it came out really cute and she really liked it.
So don't you think that letting your daughter pick the fabric was really key to making that memory quilt so successful in such short notice?
Yeah, it really was, because like I said, it was fabric that I never would have chosen, and looking back on it, I probably would have chosen something that I thought that she would like, but you know, having her choose it herself, it absolutely was something that she ended up loving.
Now, you have another quilt that you told me about that has a lot of personal memories, which is a family quilt.
Right. I've made a couple of flannel quilts for my kids. When I was a little kid, and I'm dating myself, this was like 40 years ago when I was little, my grandmother used to make my sister and I all these flannel nightgowns. My favorite show when I was little was Little House on the Prairie, and I always wanted to be Laura Ingalls.
Oh.
So she would make us these like old-fashioned flannel nightgowns. And then years ago, when she got older and she couldn't sew anymore, she made this big box of scraps. And at first I was like, what in the world am I going to do with this big box of 40-year-old fabric scraps? So I just ended up cutting them into like 5 or 6 inch squares, and I sewed them up into rows. So it was really scrappy, and I did some scrappy borders. And I did end up having to buy some new flannel just for the borders, but it came out really cute. And then I did hand quilting the big stitch method with pearl cotton, so that went pretty quickly. And they're not the most beautiful quilts in the world, but they're really soft and snuggly. And when I look at them, I always think of my grandmother, and I remember the patterns in those fabrics having those nightgowns. Like when I see the little flab, a little yellow flower in a particular fabric, I think about that nightgown that she made me. So they're really sentimental. I really love them.
We also have one with clothing that Greg's grandmother made, my husband's grandmother. And so also it's very, very personal because his mother remembers that's their aprons and her sister's dress and her mom's house coat, you know, those kind of things. I think those memories, the memory ones are just so, the clothing is amazing. You really do get that history every time you feel and touch them.
Yeah, and you remember the actual garment somehow, even though it can be decades and decades ago. Like I said, you'll see the flower in the fabric or the plaid or the stripe, and you'll remember the actual thing, the actual garment. So it's really nice.
So I want to switch gears here for a minute because you have got a free block of the month that you're doing, and I think this is so fun for people to get involved with. Tell me about it.
Yes, well, it's a free project, and I've never designed a block of the month before, so I had a lot of fun designing it, and I think people are really going to like it. I called it So Sweet Simplicity, and it's going to start at the end of October, so there's still plenty of time to sign up, and it's going to run 5 months, October through February, so it's not too long. You don't have to commit an entire year or 13 months to making a project. You can get it done pretty quick. And I called it So Simple because the blocks look kind of complicated, but they're really not. Every month there's a step-by-step tutorial. There's lots of diagrams for every step to follow along. And I try to include a little bit of something for everybody. There's a lot of different options for how you can make the project. So if you just like to do piecing, you can just piece the quilt. But if you like to do applique or hand embroidery, there's going to be patterns for that too. And I even have some YouTube tutorials on how to do simple hand embroidery stitches, really basic ones like the back stitch and French knot. So if you've never tried hand embroidery, this might be a really good project for you to start out with and try it and see if you like it. And then there's going to be options. You can do all 6 blocks for the quilt, or you can do 4 blocks if you're short on time. Mm-hmm. So there's, like I said, hopefully something for everybody there.
That is so perfect. I think that giving people some options is always good because everybody has a different amount of time for these things.
Right. And some people you talk to and they're like, I love applique. And then other people are like, I hate applique, or, you know, I love hand embroidery, or I've never tried hand embroidery. So like I said, there's something here for everybody. So And we're also going to have bloggers, featured bloggers, doing a blog hop, and they're going to be making all of the blocks in different fabrics. So you're going to be able to hop around and see how other bloggers are making their blocks and what fabrics they're choosing, so you can get some inspiration that way, too. And we're going to have prizes and linky parties so people can see what everybody's making. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to sign up.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So people can sign up at your website, right? Tell them where to go.
Yes. Just go to JacquelineSteves.com, and there's a tab at the top that says BOM. And you click on that, and it'll tell you exactly what to do to sign up. And the important thing is that if you're already a subscriber of mine, if you already get my e-magazine, this is going to be a separate event. So if you're already subscribed to the e-magazine, you have to sign up separately for the block of the month, and then every month you're going to get the email with the PDF pattern.
Okay, so it's a separate sign-up than just your newsletter. We can do that. So, Jacqueline, I want to go back to the sort of important quilts that we make. And one of the things a lot of people like to make is a quilt for a wedding, whether their own anniversary or someone that's getting married. And you are thinking about doing that, right?
Yes. Well, actually, I started one. My daughter got married just over 2 years ago. And I started it about 6 months before she got married. And I'm still working on it. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. but I'm designing it as I go. So it's taking me a little bit longer. And every single block is like a different size. And most of them have embroidery or applique. So it's going to be really pretty and really unique, but it is taking me a while. And like I put a lot of quotes and a poem in there, so it takes a while to, you know, embroider all that lettering and everything.
Yeah, and did you also take this daughter to go pick out fabric for it, or did you sort of select it?
Kind of, yeah. We went shopping, and I asked her what colors she liked. And so she showed me the kinds of colors that she liked. And then I went back and I found a lot of fabrics. And the palette, it's kind of a vintage palette. There's like gold and lilac and brown and robin's egg blue. And it doesn't sound pretty, but it's actually that all the fabrics together are very pretty together.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I've wanted to do just for myself, you know, like make like one of those special sort of life quilts. I did one called Times Remembered, which was based on like a Baltimore album. But I'd like to do, I mean, I'd really love to do like a double wedding ring being, you know, a wedding quilt. Have you done one?
No, I don't really like curved piecing. I avoid it when I can. I actually designed a couple of patterns, like orange peel patterns, using applique so that I don't have to do the curved piecing. I would rather applique it than actually have to do curved piecing.
I love that you're putting quotes on the wedding quilt. I think that that's the words just make it so special.
Right. And I try to pick things that that my daughter and her husband would really like. Like I have a quote about love from Shakespeare on there, and my daughter's an English teacher, so you know that's perfect for her. So that kind of thing makes it really personal and really special for the person that you're giving it to.
Yeah. And how are you dealing with the fact that it's taking you a long time? Do you think you'll have enough fabric, or will you have to improvise, do you think?
Well, I bought a lot of fabric. I pulled a lot of stuff from my stash, and I bought a few yards of each of the ones that the fabrics that I really, really loved and I knew I'd probably want to use a border, I bought a few yards of.
Okay.
So I have a basket full of fabric that's just dedicated to that project that I'm not using for anything else until it's completely done.
Right. Yeah, I think that that's a good idea because projects like that often take longer than we think that they will. And to run out would just be miserable. I mean, you'd be miserable if you needed to match the fabric.
Right. So. And she asked me a couple weeks ago, you know, if I was ever going to get it done. And I promised her that it would be done for her 10-year anniversary. So I figure I have 7.5 years left to work on it, so I'm not too worried about it.
Well, that's good because you can't find that fabric in 7.5 years. So
Right. And I've given myself lots of leeway there.
That's right. Well, Jacqueline, this has been so much fun. Thank you for coming on and sharing your new block of the month so people can sign up at JacquelineSteves.com. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me at patsloan.com. We'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.